Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Archaeotech Podcast, episode 211. I'm your host, Chris Webster, with my co-host, Paul Zimmerman. Today we talk to Denise Argote about new techniques she's using to study archaeological sites and artifacts. Let's get to it. Welcome to the show, everyone. Paul, how are you doing today?
Doing fine. It's nice fall weather here, and I'm hoping to get away from it before it gets any colder. Just found out that we won a new project in Saudi, and so it's quite likely that I'm going to be heading out in a week or two to go lead this. Mm. It's going to be a big overhead power transmission line survey. So it's not something I've done before, but I've done a lot of survey work there, and I'm looking forward to getting back out in the field. How are you doing, Chris?
There you go. Oh, I'm doing all right. Yeah, we're on our way across the country to North Carolina. We usually go there for mid-November to end of December timeframe to visit with my wife's family for the holidays. And so we're currently in Alabama, but it's nice and not too hot here, which is not something you usually say about Alabama. But You know, I was going to say, you get in that project, you're just like a typical New Yorker wintering in Saudi Arabia. I'm telling you.
Yeah. So. Everybody's doing it now.
Everybody's doing it. You're gonna have to just get an apartment over there and start bringing your wife over, you know, just make a time of it. So,
well, we've got a house that we rent, so I don't need an apartment, but I am considering buying a car out there for myself.
Yeah. All right. Well, today, speaking of working abroad, we have someone on calling from Mexico today, and we actually had her on back in episode 134, which we will link to in the show notes. So we're going to get an update on some of the things she's working on and maybe some new information as well. So welcome to the show, Denise Argote.
Hi. Hi, Chris. Hi, Paul. Nice to be here with you.
Glad to have you back.
All right. Yeah. So why don't you just start off by, you know, reacquainting our audience with who you are and what you're doing, like where you're working right now and just some overall general details.
Well, you say already, I'm Denise Argote, live here in Mexico. I'm an archaeologist, but I also work a lot with archaeological or archaeometrical methods and techniques. I apply them to the study of archaeological sites and materials. I keep working here in Mexico City in several sites. I've been working on Teotihuacan, Chichen Itza, Mitla, just to say some few of the sites that I have worked with. But I mean, all the work that we have done, me and all the colleagues that work with me, well, it has been pretty cool.
Yeah, awesome. Well, so we linked to an article in this episode from the Journal of Archaeological Science. It was published in June of 2020, Designing the Underworld in Teotihuacan, Cave Detection Beneath the Moon Pyramid by ERT and ANT Surveys. And we talked to you about that on the last show. So we can reference that other show for if people want to know more about that. But I'm just wondering, starting with Teotihuacan, have you guys been back there since then and doing additional work? What kind of update can you give us on that?
Well, we also work on another area of archaeology that is portable X-ray fluorescence, but this was applied to the mural paintings. We haven't been working on the geophysical part. We stopped that project, but we keep on working on the other area that is geochemistry. And we also find very interesting things, like, I don't know if you know, cinnabar is a mineral that was used to paint some bodies, some burials, and we also found that in the mural paintings. It was never been found before, not in Teotihuacan, maybe in the Mayan area, but not in Teotihuacan. It was the first time that we found understanding mural paintings, the application of this mineral. I mean, maybe the audience doesn't know what cinnabar is, but it's a mineral that is made from mercury and sulfur. It is kind of toxic. I'm not surprised that ancient people didn't use it often. Mm-hmm. But in the place of Teotihuacan, in some substructures, we found this mural applied on mural paintings. So that was also a really interesting find.
Yeah, I'm actually, as soon as you mentioned cinnabar, I thought, oh, mercury. And you said on graves. My only real knowledge of it is that cinnabar was found on some of the bodies at the Royal Cemetery of Ur in Iraq. And it's presumed that it might have been used in part as a preservative. Do you know if that's the same thing with these the Mexican graves that have cinnabar in them?
Well, the cinnabar had more like a cosmogonic point of view, mm-hmm. like a worldwide vision. It was not because of the preservation of the bodies. It was more related to the way that they saw cinnabar and related to the way that blood itself behaves. Why is this? Because cinnabar, when it's applied and it's oxide, it gets black, obscure, dark. And blood does the same way. If you leave blood stains in a wall and get oxide, it also gets a little bit dark. So in this way, they related. And the color is red also, I mean. There are several characteristics that relate cinnabar to blood. So blood is life. Blood is the substance that people gave to the gods to maintain and sustain life. Mm-hmm. So there are several magical associations, religious associations, and that was the motive that they used cinnabar to apply to the burials and some other materials. We also found cinnabar in Chichen Itza. There is also an article we published in 2017 about a sculpture that is inside the castle. The castle is the greatest pyramid in Chichen Itza, also known as the Kukulkan Temple. Inside of it, there is an ancient substructure, an older pyramid. And inside this pyramid, there's a temple. Inside the temple, there are two sculptures, a chacmol and a jaguar throne. This throne is painted in red, and this red painting is cinnabar and amethyst. So there's also another association of this mineral to something that is not human remains, not burials, not bones.
And how did you find it on the murals?
With portable X-ray fluorescence. This use of new technologies to the study of archaeological sites and materials has been developing a lot in the last 20 years. And one of these developments are portable instruments. X-ray fluorescence make us analyze several materials. You can do sculptures, you can do obsidian, you can do bones, you can do mural paintings, a lot of analysis that you can do with that. And what we obtain is the chemical composition of that material you're analyzing. In this case, mural paintings. We also analyze the jaguar throne with the same instrument, and we are also applying it to provenance studies of obsidian materials.
I'm just wondering, you know, this is the Archaeotech podcast, so we like to, you know, expose our listeners to technology they may not have used or explain the use a little bit. So I'm curious about the portable XRF, which we've talked about on this show before and has actually been around for a little while. But can you give us some idea as to the practical application of using XRF? Like, does it, you know, have certain conditions that it works better in? You know, how long does the battery last, for example? I mean, you're going out possibly in the middle of nowhere. Do you have to bring extra power sources? I mean, I don't know anything. I've never used one. So just some practical uses of it. What are some of the considerations?
Well, this instrument is really practical because it looks like a laser gun, actually. Many of my colleagues play with it. Well, anyway, that's some other thing. And you can take it anywhere. I mean, you use portable batteries too. You just switch them like any instrument that uses lithium batteries. Sure. So it's really practical to take it anywhere. You don't need any special preparation of the materials, maybe a little bit of cleaning with a brush, a soft brush or something like that. But you just can point at your material and just shoot practically. It also has a trigger, so it looks like a pistol.
Nice.
Great. So you can take it anywhere where you normally take your ray gun.
Exactly. I mean, we have analyzed some murals in the ceiling, some paintings in the ceilings of very tall Mayan buildings. And I mean, believe it, if you have any bigger, heavier instrument, you could not take it up. But with this pistol, you just go and shoot all the walls. And you don't damage anything. It's non-destructive, non-altering, non-invasive instruments.
Nice. So if they make a modern Indiana Jones movie or Lara Croft or something, won't have a pistol on their hip, they'll have a portable XRF, right?
Exactly. Well, you can see if your enemy is made of any contaminated material.
Nice. So nice. The data that you get back from that, I'm presuming that you have to process it in some form. What do you get directly back from the XRF ray gun?
Well, you have two informations, qualitative and a quantitative information. In the qualitative, you get a spectra or a spectrum if you're analyzing just one artifact, and a spectra of all the chemical elements that compose your sample. Mm-hmm. And then you can make a linear regression using some standards and convert these spectra into quantities that could be percentages or part per million, depending on the element. Mm-hmm. So you got the quantitative part. Of course, the spectra, you can see it, and for example, in the case of cinnabar, you only need to see the two elements, the two main elements that compose cinnabar, that is sulfur and mercury. If you have these two elements in the spectra, then you know you have cinnabar. But for example, in the case of obsidian, when we want to know where the raw materials come from, we need to process this spectra, convert it to quantities, and then statistically process them to make groups, and then to know where these artifacts that we found in the Mayan area, where the raw materials came from.
Okay.
You know, so there are the two parts. Depends on the objective you have, what is the use that you want to make of the information. When you have this objective really clear, then you can know how to process the data and how to use your instrument too.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Thanks for that explanation. With that, we're going to take a break and come back on the other side and continue this discussion with Denise Argote. Back in a minute.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the Archaeotech Podcast, episode 211. That's a lot of podcasts.
Yeah.
Every time I look at that number, Paul. Anyway, I think I subconsciously didn't know we were podcasting that high, because when I created the link for our show last week, it was like, I think I did 210 or 110 accidentally, like subconsciously. I'm like, there's no way we can be in the 200s. But anyway, there we are. So go back and listen to the back catalog. There's many years worth of things there. All right. So one of the things that brought you into this podcast was discussing, you know, new technologies and methodologies applied to the study of archaeological sites and artifacts. And I know you mentioned you've worked in Chichen Itza most recently, not leaving Teotihuacan just now, or maybe we are. If you want to talk about Chichen Itza, that's fine. But I'm really interested in what some of these perhaps newer things are. Like XRF is something that I would say not everybody uses, but it has been around for a little while. It's just, you know, it's just not an instrument not everybody has purchased, right, that they have, but it's the kind of thing that everybody probably knows about, at least to some degree. Is there anything that you're using in the last couple of years that maybe is a little bit on the fringe or on the cutting edge and not too many people are using it as well?
Well, I don't know if you know about geophysics that has also been applied, I believe, in the last decade. At least here in Mexico, maybe in some other places it has been longer. But here in Mexico, mm-hmm. in the last decade, it has been a really good development of all these instruments and the application of them in the study of archaeological sites. We have applied them in Teotihuacan, as you already said, in this article of the Journal of Archaeological Science. We have applied them in Chichen Itza, that is also a great site. We are recently applying it in Mitla. It's an archaeological site in Oaxaca. Oaxaca is one of the greatest cultures that also lived here in Mexico in ancient times. And we had really good discoveries around all these places. I mean, in Teotihuacan, we found this cave beneath the moon pyramid. And as we can see by the data, it is a natural cave that tells us that is the only natural cave above which there was built a pyramid. In the Quetzalcoatl pyramid and the Sun pyramid, there are all artificial caves. Only in the Moon pyramid is a natural cave. What does this information tell us is that probably this cave was the focal point for the whole design of the city. It's like this is the starting point for the design. It's actually the only fixed point in all the Avenue of the Dead. It is really important data because regarding this discovery, we can have a lot of conclusions or interpretations about what the ancient people thought, what they used to design the city, to trace this ancient city, and to decide how it was going to be, how it was going to be built. So I believe that is a really great discovery.
Yeah. I'm curious about that natural cave that was found. And that being kind of the basis and the earliest part of the building and construction on the site. What other evidence do you guys have that's correlating that? What evidence do you have that's showing that this is the earliest, you know, I don't know, occupation, but building period, I guess?
Well, of course, there are several other archaeologists that have made excavations inside the pyramid, and they found really old stages of the construction. There are seven stages that have been found only for the construction of this pyramid. I mean, the cave had not been excavated yet. We are trying to convince some authorities to do so, at least to give us a little bit of money to do that. But in the meanwhile, we only have the information that we extracted by these archaeometrical means. So besides that is what we have. I mean, the other two caves that have been discovered are artificial. I mean, think of it. If you have three great pyramids, the three of them have caves beneath. Two of them are artificial and one of them is natural. What would you think about?
Sounds like they're part of a complex. Right? Between the pyramid and the cave going together in their cosmology in some sense.
Exactly. The caves, pyramids, and mountains are really important features in the cosmogony of pre-Hispanic people. They made an axis. You know that the universe in ancient times, well, they thought that way, was divided in four portions. And in the center was the fifth portion. The center was the axe that unifies the infra world, the underworld, the superficial world, the terrenal world, and the divine world. And this axe was in the middle of the pyramids. So if you have the underworld, the pyramid, and then the sky, you have an axe that links all these three plains.
Okay. Do you think these caves intersect? I can't remember if you said that or not. Are they? Is it like a network of caves, or are they separate amongst the in the area there?
They're separate.
Okay.
Yeah. Only linked to the pyramid that they are beneath.
Okay. Awesome. Wow. That's really cool. So these caves have been explored. They just haven't been excavated. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Kukulkan's, well, Quetzalcoatl, I mean, because Kukulkan is in the Mayan area. Kukulkan's is another temple that also have a cave, well, in this case, partially filled with water, in the Chichen Itza site. Mm. And it has the same meaning, right? The unification of the three planes, the underworld, the terrenal world, and the divine world. I mean, there are several examples in Mesoamerican sites that have these elements in their cities. So there is some pattern in the worldview of these ancient civilizations.
Right.
Yeah. So when we spoke to you last 3 years ago and you were talking about this, I remember being really kind of blown away by the discussion of ERT and ANT and how you'd found these caves and the 3D modeling of them non-invasively, or basically non-invasively, from sensors outside. It's been kind of a touchstone, something I think about actually fairly regularly for some reason when I'm thinking about, you know, the 211 episodes of this podcast. And I was wondering, because I was considering, you know, reaching out to you separately, but I'm so glad that you're here anyhow. What other kinds of geophysical techniques have you been pioneering, experimenting with, using lately? Because this one here was, the ERT and ANT, when you first told us about it, was absolutely new to me and novel, never heard of anything like it before, and was, like I said, was blown away by what you were able to find using them.
Well, ERT is a little bit more common. Mm-hmm. Case in Chichen Itza, 5 years before, we use it also to find the cars beneath the Kukulkan Pyramid. We also use them in other small sites in Tlaxcala and Hidalgo and some other states here in Mexico. Radar is also very common. I'm sure you have heard of it, because it's like the most common geophysical instrument that is has been used in a lot of colleagues around the world. And we are also using it in all the sites. You know, it is really important to use more than just one instrument when you are dealing with an archaeological site. Because like in the case of Teotihuacan, ERT gives you a high value resistance anomaly. But you can interpret it like hard rock or like a void. So how are you going to discriminate between these two very different materials when you use a second technique that gives you insights of, oh, it is a low velocity anomaly? So it is a void, not hard rock, you know. So using more than one just technique is better, because it gives you more information of what you are dealing with, what you are finding, right? So ANT is a seismic noise, is really new in the case of archaeological studies. We are also using it now in Mitla, in this Oaxaca archaeological site. We're also getting really good information. For example, Mitla is a site that its name says means the place of the dead. But very few tombs have been found there. So why was it called the place of the dead if you only have like two or three tombs, right? Yeah. So there is an ancient legend that says that beneath the Spanish church was all a cave system where the ancient Zapotec people buried their governors, the kings, and all their big authorities. Mm. But it has never been found. So was it real, or is it just a legend? So we applied ERT, an ant, to search beneath the church. And actually, we found some caves beneath the church. So it seems more like a real thing than a legend. And it's also a good discovery because that explains the name of the city. It is the place of the dead because all the important high rank authorities were inside these tombs, inside these places, burial places.
Okay. Wow. That's pretty cool. I love being able to, you know, take a place name like that, right? And then, you know, kind of look for the significance behind that. It reminded me, it's when you said Mitla, it sounded familiar to me and I had to look it up. We covered a story about that on episode 225 of the Archaeology Show, which came out on July 9th of actually this year. So the article was called The Backdoor to Hell. That's what they call it. So it was very dramatic because it was an article, a news article. But yeah. All right. Well, let's take a break. And when we come back, we will wrap up this discussion with Denise Sargate back in a minute. Welcome back to the Archaeotech Podcast, episode 211. And let's shift gears a little bit. So you mentioned Chichen Itza. What have you guys been doing over in Chichen Itza? Because Chichen Itza is one of those places that I feel like just about everyone's heard of, like the Pyramids of Giza or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, it sounds like one of those places everybody's known about. So what new research is being done? What unanswered questions are you guys looking at in that area?
Well, after the 2014 and 2015 discovery that we made with ERT, we have been working also with archaeological materials, the structures, mural paintings with portable X-ray fluorescence. And in the former 2 years, in the last 2 years, we made another project. We are working on another project using radar to analyze all the plaza. There is a really big plaza that is around the Kukulkan Temple.
Okay.
It's around 10,000 square kilometers. So it took us around 10 days working sun to sun. That was really hard because it's really hot in there.
But
I mean, 10 days working to sweep all the plaza and the ball game to see what's beneath. You know, Chichen Itza also have several construction stages. Chichen Itza is a site that were built around 650 before after Christ and was abandoned around maybe 1100 after Christ. So it has around 500 years of settlements. So the last one, that the one that we can see currently, is the last stage. But there is a 500-year history beneath this plaza, you know. So we occurred to use radar to see what's beneath it. And we found two previous stages of the construction of this plaza. It was really small in the beginning and grew over time to get the size that we can now see. So it's also interesting because it tells you about the history of the settlement.
Did the, just a little bit about Chichen Itza here, did the function of Chichen Itza change through time? Can you tell that within the archaeological record?
Well, in the beginning, it was also a ceremonial site, at least in the center part, but it was also high rank settlement. There were several palaces in what we know as the old Chichen Itza, that is south of the site, like 2 kilometers south of the Kukulkan Pyramid. So there were also several colonies. Well, small areas that were occupied by different rulers. It's a very complex city because you have a very cosmopolitan area with people coming from several sites of the Mayan area. It has the people, it had people from Uxmal, people from Mayapan, people from the center of Mexico that were communicating and interrelating with the Chichen Itza people. It's very complex. It's very similar to Teotihuacan. You know, Teotihuacan is also a very cosmopolitan city that welcomed people from all around the Mesoamerican area. In this case, Chichen Itza also had the influence of several cultures, Central Mexico cultures and Mayan cultures. So this gave this bloom of the culture, of the Chichen Itza culture.
Okay. Wow. And when did you guys work out there last, remind me?
The last time we went was in May. I am preparing the report of the last town we made. Still working on the report. I mean, it is hard work to go to the field and make the prospection, but it's a lot longer to process the data, to make sense of it, to try and apply different filters, to enhance the features that you are finding, and then to write a report that makes sense to other people that do not manage this kind of information or techniques. So it's a long work.
Yeah. I know you're still in the process of writing the report, but is there anything you can disclose that were some insights or revelations based on the research you guys did?
Well, in the case of the ball game, we know that it extended longer than it seems that is currently seen. We also find a small structure near the ball game inside the plaza, but almost in front of the ball game that you cannot see actually or currently. We also find two stages of the construction of the plaza. And we believe that we might found near the pyramid, near the staircases, some areas with some burials, but we don't know if they're human remains or maybe just some gifts for the gods.
Okay.
So, all right. But there's still a lot to work with, but these are some things that were not, that we cannot see just by walking around the area.
Right. Of course. So, Denise, you're obviously working all over Mexico and have worked all over Mexico on a variety of different sites with a variety of different geophysical techniques. Is there something new, a new project that you haven't yet started, or maybe some new technique that you're hoping to test out sometime in the near future?
Well, we're trying to build a lab in the area of Chichen Itza. It's still a project that's going on, but we want to implement several technologies to the archaeological study, that is maybe X-ray diffraction, Raman, laser Raman. I don't know if you know Raman spectrometry.
No, I'm not familiar with it.
Well, it's a laser that is beamed to some artifacts or even walls or any solid material, and it can give you the exact mineral that composed this sample. For example, in the case of pigments, red pigments, you know, the common pigments that the minerals that were used to make red pigments are iron oxides and cinnabar. If you just see them, you might not discriminate which was. Or even in the iron oxides, you have several minerals: goethite, hematite, limolite, and some other minerals. And you cannot know which of these minerals are the one that they were using. So Raman spectrometry tells you the precise mineral that was used to make this pigment. So that is also very good information. And there are two two instruments, the one that you have in a lab and the one that you can take to the sites. So it's also non-destructive, and it's really, really important now in current archaeological investigations. Mm-hmm.
That sounds very similar to XRF. How does it differ from like the portable XRF? Or are you just walking out there with a holster with one laser on one side and one on the other side and just shooting everything?
that's it. Well, they are complementary techniques because X-ray fluorescence tells you the composition. It will tell you have iron, you have maybe sulfur or the elements, but you don't know the mineral. Raman tells you the mineral. It doesn't tell you the composition. It tells you the mineral.
Okay.
So they are complementary. I mean, with fluorescence, I can tell you this red pigment was made of iron oxides. But I cannot tell you if it was hematite, limolite, goethite, or any other mineral. You know?
Okay.
Raman or even X-ray refraction can tell you that information. So they are complementary.
Okay. Wow, that's cool. Yeah. I don't think I'd ever heard of that one, that spectrometry. We'll have to find some information about that. All right. Well, we are just about done for today. What do you guys have coming up on the horizon here? What's your next field season look like?
Busy, as always. But that's good. I mean, we have in the state of Chiapas, there is a project to find the remains of an old general that came, well, a Colombian general that came to Mexico and established in Chiapas. But the Colombian government wants to find him because he is a hero in that country, but they do not know where is the burial place of his remains. So we are gonna try to find them. That's a project for next year. We also have going the Mitla area project, also the Chichen Itza project. We are trying to make leader flights to map all the tropical area. You know, it's really difficult to walk around in these environments. So a LIDAR image could tell us a lot of how is the distribution of this city without having to walk around all this jungle area. Mm-hmm. So these are two projects that are going to be running next year. And there's always new projects. There's always new people that come to us and ask us our help analyzing, statistically processing the data, making analysis. I'm also working on a royal paintings, rupestre, I don't know how you say it. All these prehistoric paintings that are made in caves.
Okay.
We are also making some analysis in caves to see the pigments and determining the raw materials of these prehistoric paintings. It's also a project that's going on. I don't know. There's always new objectives, new projects to work in.
All right. Well, sounds like you're keeping busy anyway.
Yeah, I'm more busy than I would like to, but it's fine.
Well, thank you. Despite your busy schedule, to take some time to talk to us about this. It's been really fascinating to me.
No, it was really great to talk to you guys. So thanks you for the invitation. And I hope to maybe be here some other time.
Great.
Absolutely.
The doors are open. Yeah.
Exactly. So if you or if anybody else listening ever wants to come on the show, talk about any projects you're working on and just have a conversation with Paul and I, then hit us up at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com, or you can find contact information on the show notes or the webpage archpodnet.com. All right. With that, thanks, Paul. And especially thanks, Denise, for coming on the show.
Thanks for listening to the ArchaeoTech Podcast. Links to items mentioned on the show are in the show notes at www.archpodnet.com/ArchaeoTech. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com and paul@lugal.com. Support the show by becoming a member at archpodnet.com/members. The music is a song called Off Road and is license free from Apple. Thanks for listening.
This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV traveling the United States, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, DigTech LLC, Cultural Media, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Rachel Roden.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.